Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Schirachabrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Barton Bishop filling in for Dr. Erson Religioso, who is taking care of a sick wife after he's recovering from the flu, as they seem to pass it on within their household. And joining us for the thrice time, the one and only, I think, Jerry Durham. Thanks for joining us again, Jerry. By the way, you are the only guest on this show to come back three times. Stefania Bell was the only one to come twice, and you take the honors for whatever they're worth, that you are the only, the one and only to come three times.
I will highly assume there are about 10 emails to Stefania begging her to come back where she just kept saying no, no.
She... No comment.
Okay.
All right. So before we get started,
by the way, does that mean that I'm actually a host now? Is that Mike? Am I a co-host? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
I think you just got promoted.
I
just got promoted. Does that mean I get a raise?
You are in the circle of trust.
We're gonna double your pay, Bart.
We're gonna triple your pay. Tripling your pay. Three hugs per episode. All right. So before we get started, before we start talking all the business and the value, on a different note, we all have obviously other things going on in our lives that are much more important than work. And I think everyone can honestly say that family always comes first, whether it's your wife, your husband, your kids, your dogs, or your siblings. So for the last several years, I've been supporting Joe and his family through a foundation that they started how many years has it been now, Joe?
My brother passed away in 2004, so it's been 11 years. We started the foundation approximately 10 years ago, and the Brian Palmer Foundation works in Maryland, is partnered with the Center for Infant and Child Loss. And we reach out to parents, siblings, grandparents, friends who are grieving the loss of a child. And our latest campaign is CHISL, which stands for Caring Hearts in Surviving Early Loss. So basically stems out of in 2004 when my brother passed away. He was 12 years old and went to bed and just never woke up. He was a healthy 12-year-old boy. And when that happens, you don't know where to turn, and frankly, there aren't always resources available for those families. We try to bridge that gap, and our annual fundraiser is tomorrow night, and so we do a bull and oyster roast each year, and if anybody would like to find out more about the foundation, they can visit our website at brianpalmerfoundation.org.
And that's Brian with a Y, BRYANPALMER foundation.org, and we'll put it on the website. But it's a great event. We have a lot of fun. There's not a lot of sadness. It's celebrating the life and everything that happened. But you know, we do this podcast show because we love talking with people. We love spreading information and getting all the latest stuff out for you guys to listen to. And we've never asked for anything and probably never will. But if you've enjoyed the shows, if you like the information, check out the website. And I'm sure Joe agrees that even the smallest donation goes the longest, the furthest, and can help so many families. So check it out. And if you see fit, just donate to the foundation, and it'll be greatly appreciated.
Appreciate that. We do a lot of good work, and it helps to keep my brother's name alive as well. So we help a lot of families, and we appreciate anybody's support. So
there you go, Brian Palmer Fund Foundation.org. And to transition to speaking of good work and doing quality work, we'll go right to Jerry. We'll go right to the Jerry. Last two podcasts, which have been great, and we've gotten tremendous amount of positive feedback on social media and Twitter in particular. We've had some great 140 character discussions, and we've talked about out of network, and we've brought up the term value over the last two episodes, and we've touched on it, but I don't think we've really talked about specifics. And I'm sure people are wondering, what does value actually mean, and how do you establish value for your business, for your clinic, for yourself as a brand? Value is the important thing in growth, right? You have to differentiate yourself with what value you bring. So I know you're big on the customer experience, Jerry. What is the value of your clinic? If somebody calls and says, do you take my insurance? And you say, well, we're out of network. What is your pitch for value?
So the underlying grand theme is we create happy patients. And yeah, it was patients at the time, so I leave it at that. And the idea to set the stage was, in order to create a happy patient, let's face it, the bulk of our business, all the complaints, was never on the clinical side. We've never had a complaint that your clinical care sucked. It always had to do with something when the customer wasn't in under clinical care. So it's like, if we're going to create a happy patient, we got to take care of them from the first phone call till the very last, you know, until that bill, until their final zeroed out bill was taken care of. And even now to this day, you know, how are we engaging with them afterwards to create a happy patient? So everything I do on the phone is with that in mind. And again, as I spoke about in the past, no surprises, right? Financially, what time is my appointment? By the way, with three clinics, where is their appointment? Making sure the location is verified. All those things that add up to creating a happy patient is the value I bring. Because if you walk into my clinic and you think value is all about the Alter-G and the swimming pool and all the fancy equipment, you're going to think I struck out, because there is no fancy equipment. So it's all about creating that happy patient in my clinic.
So you have a happy patient, they come in, right? But they're not really a patient until they're in your clinic. They're a customer.
Right.
Right. Anybody that's away from you, you can call them potential patients, sure, but they're not. They're customers. Once they come in and they get treated by your therapist, they're patients. And then that's dependent on the infrastructure of your clinic, right? How smoothly things work. So people have this preconceived notion of a medical office as sterile, as slow, as boring. And you can do that, and you can just be traditional, or you can make changes. And Jerry, you sent me the message, that the picture message today of your optometrist's office, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, that was, and if I'll try to post it on the therapyinsiders.com page. I mean, that was incredible looking. That's nothing like you would expect a clinical office to look like. It was dark, rich browns. It looked like a coffee shop almost. It was
bustling. It was bustling, needless to say. And you know what's funny? So I send you that picture. So I send Gene a picture. Can I call you Gene? Dr. Gene?
I guess Dr. I'll let Gene. It go, since it's your third podcast. I mean, if it was your first one, I'd be more formal, but I'll let it go.
So I send Gene this picture, and I said, so would you think I'm in a retail space? No, I said, would you think I'm in, is this typical of the doctor's office you would expect? And I sent him a picture. And so we had a short conversation, and then I left. And around the corner, as I'm walking back to my car, is another very different, value-driven, as you could tell from the front end, optometrist office. And I paused, I stopped, and I went, well, that's a different target market. So it was just interesting to look at those two, you know. Oh, by the way, both of them were busy. Both of them downtown San Francisco, both drawn in the clientele they needed, because they're getting the word out and people know what their value is. So it was very interesting.
Right, and we're not saying put lipstick on the pig, right? We're not saying cover up your poor clinicians or anything like that. We're just saying put a different spin on what people expect, right? Give them an expectation that this is not what their mind was developing. And from the get-go, you have a sell because they come in and they expect sterility, they expect boringness, they expect delay. And as soon as they fill out their paperwork, we have... there is a medical office near me, and they've switched to completely everything on all their EMR they give to patients on iPads or some kind of tablet. And people have been eating that up. I mean, it's a streamlined system. People get a tablet, they fill it out, goes into their network, and you're good to go. I mean, that's completely different. Obviously, not everyone can afford that, but there's other things you can do. And one thing that I remember Bart and his clinic doing, and this was several years ago, they had a meeting, a conference, and they were focusing on the wow. They wanted their patients to have a wow experience. Give the patient, make sure they leave with a wow. Right, Bart? I mean, that's so patient customer centric. It's not, they expect when they come to you, they expect good clinical service, they expect to get better, but give them something that they don't expect. Give them that wow.
Yeah. It came to us from a book called If Disney Ran Your Hospital by Fred Lee. And Fred was just had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in hospital organization and running, but he came to this by having the opportunity to become a Disney cast member, which is an employee of Disney. Every employee at Disney is called a cast member. So he took the training at Disney, he became a cast member, and from that, he applied those principles to hospital-based and therefore healthcare-based, you know, environments and those strategies. And one of them was this concept of a little wow, which basically is what it sounds like. It's something small. It doesn't even have to be monetary, but it's something small that's meaningful to patients. You can do things like a patient's having a bad day, and so you go to your Keurig machine and you fire them up a cup of coffee and hand it to them, or you send them an e-card when they get back to their office, they check their email and the e-card says, "I hope you're having a better day, and you know here's to better things coming along," or whatever. I mean, it could be many things. We've had people that have walked patients out to their cars in a freak rainstorm with an umbrella that we have in the clinic instead of if the patient didn't have one. We've also had people change tires for patients. Patient goes out to their car, they have a flat tire. We've had a staff run out there and change their tire for them. So there could be a lot of different things from monetary value to non-monetary value, but just recognizing an opportunity and seeing them. But really the reason this is important is because and what everyone needs to start thinking about is no longer patient satisfaction. Patient satisfaction, customer satisfaction, they're really things of the past. And the two things that we need to focus on are loyalty and net promoter score. So loyalty is not how much people like you, it's how many people love you. So it's the percentage of people that on a 0 to 10 score would give you all 10s across the board, or on a 0 to 5, all 5s across the board.
What's the percentage? What's 100% of everyone?
What's 100% of everyone?
Yeah.
100%?
Okay. That's my score.
Okay, good. Disney's score is 70, by the way. So their target is 70% of their people treatment or post trip to Disney World or Disneyland, 70% of people rate them all 10s across the board. And then there is Net Promoter Score. And Net Promoter Score is similar, but it is a numerical factor that takes in the number of people that promote your services, and that's defined as giving you a 9 or 10 out of 10, minus the number of people that are detractors of your services, which are everyone that gives you a 5 or less. And they consider those at 6, 7, or 8 just to kind of be in the middle and not really caring either way. And that gets you a net promoter of how many people are actually promoting you versus detracting from you.
And has that been work? Have you guys been implementing that? Has that worked out for you?
Yeah, I mean, our net promoter scores are really high. We have net promoter scores in our clinics from mid-70s up to about 90, I think our highest is about 92%, which technically 92% is world class. The highest net promoter scores of major companies, you're talking Apple has a high net promoter score. I think BMW has a high net promoter score, Nordstrom, Ritz-Carlton, these kinds of places. And they're in the mid-70s to lower 80s for their net promoter score. They obviously have a higher N value. But what it does is it shifts the conversation. You no longer can, you know, if you have 10 questions out of 10, and if someone gives you a 10 on all of them and a 5 on one of them, that total score is going to be a 95%. So 95% seems pretty good. It's like, yeah, I've got 95% customer satisfaction. Well, the problem is that 5 out of 10 could be something really big. It could be a question about your patient, your outcome, as Jerry was talking about, you know, whether your clinical care was actually any good. It could be whether they like you. It could be whether the administration was handled properly in the back end, or your insurance payment was proper. But that score could be so big that it outshines everything else. And they say, you know what? I wouldn't go back there. I wouldn't refer my friends there.
So those scores are great to keep kind of objective measures throughout and see how you're doing, how you're faring. But what about more on a personal level? We had somebody asked on Twitter, how do you share your story, right? And Joe, your clinic is kind of near where you grew up, and I'm sure you make that part of the way you integrate getting patients and the normal clinical discussion, right? How do you tell your story to your patients to keep them interested not only in getting better, but interested in coming to physical therapy?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it, Gene, is to tell your story, be human, and develop a relationship with your patient. It's not just about what you can do for them clinically. It's about being the therapist, the friend, and at sometimes the counselor, all during your session. I think that the ability for you to put yourself out there a little bit and to develop a personal connection with your patient is what increases your score from a person that is passive, maybe like Bart was saying, 6, 7, 8, to somebody who is a supporter and an enthusiast, somebody that is actively promoting your business to other people. I think that is the key, because then they're no longer just connected to you because they came there for therapy. They're connected to you because you're connected to them. You've made that connection.
And as Joe mentions right there, just a key point to think about is, just to tie on to what Joe said, it is not about getting people to love you more. It is about getting more people to love you. Big distinction, big difference. You don't care if someone moves from a 6 to a 7 or a 7 to an 8. What you care about is getting people who like you to love you. Big key.
And so, I mean, we do a lot of little things, and I'd like to hear, you know, some of what you guys are doing. But as far as telling our story and making it personal, you know, we run a loop that tells, you know, personal information, not real personal stuff, but it lets somebody sitting in our waiting room gets a little fact or tidbit about every therapist on a TV loop, and we change that loop every month, and it lets people not only get to know us, but figure out whether they have any common interests or anything that they might want to engage us in a conversation about. So it helps to kind of stimulate that connection.
That's nice. And I'm a detail-oriented guy, right? I focus on the little things, and I think the sharing of a story, it comes down to psychology and understanding how to communicate. So one of the things I do, and Jerry, you can chime in as well because you're a half-decent communicator, I would say, is when a person comes in, especially...
Dude, you're going to have to pull out the clown horn.
I'm seeing how many clown whores I can get out in this podcast. So when somebody comes in, especially if it's a returning patient, not an evaluation, my mindset is always, when I'm treating a patient or when I'm talking, is I want people to come back for the experience of being in the clinic, not just to get better. I want them to enjoy the conversations. I want them to really look forward to having a getaway from whatever else it is, with knowing that they're going to feel better when they leave. And one of the things I always do is when somebody comes in, I never ask them, first of all, is anything about what they're there for. I ask them about how's their day going, how are they doing, just little things that separates the clinical side from their personal side, making that connection of how are you doing generally versus, hey, how's your knee or how's your shoulder or how's your neck? And that gets the ball rolling on the conversation of them tell me about themselves and their day, and then you have to be able to converse properly and understand the cues and body language and, again, the psychology of a conversation. And that plays in, Jerry, right, not only into day-to-day conversation, but that's what customer service is.
And, Gene, you have to remember it. You have to remember it through the next visit and the visit after that, because that's what they realize that, hey, he just asked me about something that I told him 2 weeks ago. And they appreciate that you cared enough to remember.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's huge. I had a patient come back from vacation. I didn't see her in 3 or so weeks. And I asked her, you know, how was your granddaughter's birthday party? And, you know, for about 40 minutes, I think we talked about her granddaughter's stuff while she was doing things. And it was awesome. I mean, time flies by and they're doing what they need to be doing. You make your cues when they're doing exercises or things like that. But I mean, that's great for everyone. I love that. It makes the day go by fast, and you generally build relationships with people. There's no, you know, quote unquote, you're not selling them anything fake. They're buying into you. You become the brand. You become, as Joe likes to say, you become their physical therapist. And I think that's part of the customer experience.
You know, it's a great point. The research shows that really it was healthcare related, so we could just say patients. But the research shows really what people want from a healthcare provider has nothing to do with the clinical side. They want someone that listens to them, and they want someone that, you know, is working towards their goals with them. That's what people want. And everything you just guys said, especially Joe saying remembering things, I would argue that would go a lot farther when you acknowledge that person's daughter in high school because of a story they told, and you say, oh, how was your daughter's soccer game this weekend? That's going to go farther than just about anything else we can do. And telling that, you know, that's making that connection and really trying to get, I think I brought this up on the first podcast, an owner, a practice manager, anybody can learn the most about their clinic and why their clinic is successful or not by sitting in the waiting room one day. Just sit in the waiting room for an hour or two. I do this about once a month. And so the way our waiting room is set up.
You are sneaky.
The way our waiting room is set up.
Wait, do you get disguised? Do you like
a stash? A Fu Manchu?
Get a stash?
No. No, because the PTs are all one-on-one with their patients and everything. So, I mean, it is what it is. They're not changing because I'm sitting there. So I get to hear the conversations on the telephone. I get to see the customers as they're greeted when they come in. I get to see how the physical therapists come out and greet their customers who are sitting in the waiting area. I get to hear them interacting with the customers in the gym area. I will tell you, my best PTs, the whole conversation is about the customer in front of them. My PTs who struggle a little more, the conversation fluctuates between being about the patient and being about them. And I have, you know, some people that I work with who say, you know, if the patient brings up their dog, you can't turn it into a conversation about you and your dog. You've got to keep the conversation going about that patient. And so you've got to be in the moment. You got to be thinking about the customer in front of you. And you got to be letting them know that you're listening to them. And sitting in the waiting area is a huge tool. I sit in PT evals now, and nothing to do clinical. They all know I'm not there to judge anything clinical. All I do is take a tally and take inventory of all the words that are used. What kind of conversation are they having? What are they doing to make sure that customer knows they're listening to them?
Yeah, that's great, aside from maybe creeping out your patients. I think
I do that a lot too, Gene. I sit in with my docs when they're doing evals, and some of it's clinical that I'm sitting in for, but besides just the what great idea on the tally of the conversation, tally of the words, I also think it's the way they're said that is really important. You know, are you telling a patient that I think we can help you, or are you saying we can help you? Or, you know, this is something we see and we have pretty good results with, or no, this is something we see often and people get better. You know, just it's the same. It's basically the same words. It's just the way they're said, and it's
right. It's the psychology. It's all about understanding how to communicate with a patient. And Jerry, I think your point about having the conversation about the patient is spot on. And it's knowing when to chime in about some interjection of your personal life to further the conversation about them. So there's nothing wrong about throwing something in there. So patients always ask, right? That most normal human beings like to have a conversation, but every single human being likes to talk about themselves and hear about themselves. That's just human nature. We like talking about ourselves. I don't
some
care
more than others.
I don't know. I don't care how altruistic you are, but some of us like to talk about ourselves more than others. No names to be named, but a person will always ask something. So they'll talk about their kids and they say, "Hey, do you have any kids?" And you say, "Yeah, I have." You know, I have a three-year-old, and then you leave it up to the patient to make the next move. You see what they say versus, like you said, just go on about your kid nonstop, because the patient, as much as they want to hear about your cute kids, they shut down because the conversation is on you now. And you have to be able to detach that and talk about them. And speaking of questions, we have some questions from Twitter. Let me throw some out there. We'll go one by one. So we have three questions from Cinema, or at Cinema Air. First question, Jerry, what are the biggest lessons you've learned from other industries besides PT that apply to out-of-network?
I love the fact that Bart brought up Disney and the WoW. I literally have my Disney book open next to me right now, because I promised Mr. Avery that I would talk a little bit about a chapter I just read. But I have my Disney book open to... It's called The Customer Rules, and it's written by an old exec there, meaning a retired exec, Lee Cockerell, and it's just a brilliant book, and it's just 39 chapters of 39 things you need to do, and every single chapter applies to healthcare, even though he writes it for everybody. So Disney was huge. Starbucks was huge. Starbucks, and I'm not kidding, this is God honest. It was Starbucks and repeatedly going into Starbucks as we were going out of network and realizing that I was spending my hard-earned money every day for a product I didn't really enjoy. And I'm dead serious about this. I could have walked one block to get a better product. But when you walk into a coffee shop and there are 12 people in line and you have your head down and you're sitting there cursing to yourself that you want to get into the office and your drink is handed to you before you even realized anybody knew you were in the place, that goes really far. So Starbucks and just experiencing them on a daily basis has been huge in going out of network.
So what lessons did you learn from Starbucks? You said their awareness, their consistency.
Well, here, put it this way. You know, I don't even think anybody knows my name, yet they're handing me the drink I order every time without me even looking up, right? So their ability to understand that, look, it's not just the product, it's the connection with the customer. And I know we were mocking them a little earlier today, but the fact that a company like that would want to bring on a policy to get their employees better engaged with their customers is just brilliant. Maybe not that topic, but is just brilliant. And I constantly engage the manager there to ask them about some of their training and the customer service type of training and how long the training is, because everything's about the customer in front of you. I mean, does anybody really need a double pump, blah, 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 blah drink? I don't even know. And they're making them and they're happy and they'll do it whatever the hell you want.
And most people don't even look at the price.
General rule, the longer your Starbucks order, the bigger a D you are. That's the general rule.
You know what I get? I get a double shot of espresso when I go in.
You know what I started doing? I get a black coffee, but I get a shot of hazelnut in there. It's delicious.
Dude,
Jerry, you have no idea what you get. They make it before you get in.
You think you're getting a double shot.
It's in the same cup, same size every time.
With a side of spit.
And I hope to God Gene ends up in front of me in some line because I'm going to out of him when he orders his, can I get a black coffee? Oh, yeah, put a half a pump of sugar-free hazelnut in there for me, please.
Well, actually, I say, can I get a black coffee with hazelnut, Jerry?
Yes.
I'll mock you Jerry, however you order it, dude.
Jerry, you and I are the same person because I befriended my Starbucks manager, the main Starbucks right outside of my clinic, and he's happened to move up through Starbucks, and he's now a regional manager, and he's you know, a really smart and bright dude. And we would sit down about every quarter and we would go through some of the things they're doing for customer service, some of the things we were doing for customer service, training, onboarding, hiring, just everything. And I think, you know, that's a great idea. It's a great thing to do. Find your resources and look outside of healthcare too. I think that was mentioned on Twitter over the last week. Just focus in healthcare.
No, it's got to be outside of healthcare. The other thing is I've recently been traveling more, and I believe we learn a lot from our negative experiences. Back to the NPSs, and a way you can use those NPSs to tie back to value, I call everything below a 9. No, 8. I call everything below an 8 and ask them. And everybody has been more than willing to share their experience. So that helps me to better understand how I'm not delivering on my brand promise so that we can make sure we're delivering on the value. So I take that objective measure and then I get on the phone and get the personal. And guess what? If people are going to give you a low score, they will share why with you. So that was another big thing. So the airline industry is a great place. They suck so bad. God bless them. They almost suck as bad as healthcare.
There. Remember that graphic that I sent to you?
Yes, dude. Yes.
God,
so there's a lot to be learned. And I tell people when it comes to customer experience and Joe talking about the stories, and it is so easy. People don't understand in healthcare that picking up the phone is innovation in healthcare because nobody picks up the phone. So if you pick up your phone, you are actually a bar above what people expect. The expectations of our customers is so low, it's not hard to deliver.
And if you call them back.
Oh my God, there you go. You're exactly right.
In a timely manner.
Now you're just talking crazy.
I think that it's so easy to wow somebody, like Bart was talking about. I like to tell my therapist that if you're not making progress, if it's outside of what PT can do, that is the perfect time. You know, some people are saying, well, if they're not getting better, they're worried, you know, they're not going to score as well or whatever. That's the perfect time to gain a real enthusiast, because you can take that person's case and it's now your job to get them to the person that they need to see, or to navigate them through the system. And so if I get a case that it's not a PT problem, I'm now their advocate in the complicated world that we live in for healthcare. And I'm telling them, like, this is who you need to see, and we're going to call and we're going to try to get you in sooner because their wait list is probably longer than you can wait, and I want you to follow up after you see him, and we'll talk about it. And I keep in contact with my patients via email, and I'm following them even though I didn't solve their problem, right? I didn't have the answers for them, okay? But I realized that. And I'm going to come away with a patient that is going to come back for any PT problem that they have because I cared enough to refer them to somebody who could help them.
Or at least call you if they have a question, if they want to know something and you've built that trust.
Is that is that crazy? Like, is that too much to ask?
It's not too much to ask. And speaking of clinical staff, I know Jerry and Joey just mentioned about your clinicians. So another question someone just asked, again, actually, at Cinema Air, is if you, in terms of your clinical staff, what has been the biggest change since going out of network, Jerry?
So this is interesting. This is, boy, I tell you what, you get... I got to figure out the right way to present this.
Why does your clinical staff listen to this podcast?
Yeah. Well, we know. Yeah. Well, no, I'm trying to figure out the right way to couch this. I don't even know what I just said. the physical therapist, because everybody's going to go, duh, but man, come spend a day with me. The physical therapist plays a far larger role in the whole experience, like we've just been talking about, with that patient than they realize. And the best way to understand how large of a role your physical therapist plays is make half of their caseload all in network $20 copay people, and make the other half of their load, you know, $100 copay people, and suss out the difference and see what happens. See who reaches their outcomes. See who has the higher customer satisfaction scores. See who has the most visits per case versus least visits per case. And run those numbers, because we're all going to be very surprised. And the take home here is that the physical therapist has to be trained better. And if I could go through it, start all over again, I would put more emphasis on that initial evaluation. And like I said, I've been sitting in with them. I would put a far more emphasis on the conversation that the physical therapist is having with that customer on the first visit, on the evaluation day, because that is going to make or break everything. And literally, it is no different than a first date.
So I'm going to give you a trade secret of chiropractic, right? And has anyone ever heard?
Oh, Jesus Christ, we just lost half of the listeners.
I know, but it's,
all,
it's.
That's all you had to say was the C word.
The C word.
Tune in about 1 minute when we're done talking about chiropractic.
It's make not sure the, Gene, you have to clown horn that he's.
No, this is a business centered podcast. People like to hear about business.
I'm 110% behind you.
It's the C word that isn't the phrase that says you don't call your country a blank, so I don't call my fraternity a frat. Yeah, it's not that C word. So chiropractic. Has anyone heard of the phrase report of findings?
Nope. I have not. Okay.
So this is directly out of the chiropractic education model. And if when you see a chiropractor, most of them, not just same as physical therapy, not everyone's the same, but when most chiropractors, when you see them, your first visit is your evaluation and x-rays and whatever else they do, other diagnostic tests that they do. And then it stops and you're done for the day. There's no conversation, but you come back the second visit, which is almost always the next day. They schedule it right away. And that visit is called your report of findings. And the report of findings is, I'm going to sit down with you for half an hour and talk to you about everything that I found in your exam and on your diagnostic imaging and in everything else, and tell you this is what's wrong with you and this is what your treatment plan is going to be. You take that and just meld that into one visit, and that's exactly what you're talking about, Jerry, which is now that we have digital x-rays, or if you're not taking x-rays or doing other imaging studies and you're just doing the exam, it's that conversation piece about truly linking the exam findings with the patient's pain and function loss and whatever else they're in for you to see, linking those together and showing them that the treatment that you prescribe is going to yield positive results. And then to tag off of what Joe said, that newsflash, not everyone gets better. You know, if every patient in the world, if that came to my clinics, got better, I wouldn't need to market for more patients, because I would have a line out the door and 10 miles long of people coming to see me to get better. So it's then being able to manage them, as Joe mentioned earlier. So thus far, you've got two knowledge bombs from me. One is, it's not about getting people to love you more. It's about getting more people to love you. Two is, newsflash for all you people listening out there, not everyone gets better. And I'll give you more if you stay tuned.
All right. Not talking about chiropractors again. Come on back, everyone. Come on back.
What you're talking about is getting buy-in. That talk that you have with the patient, you're getting them to believe. You're making a believer in you, a believer in your program, and you're asking them to buy in. You're asking them to put forth the effort that it's going to take for them to get better.
Yeah, and you didn't attend the first podcast with Jerry a couple weeks ago, but I swear I need to either give Jerry $5 every time I say this, or I need to give Daniel Kahneman, the guy who wrote the book Thinking Fast and Slow. You know, the what is it, Jerry? The emotional tail wags the logic.
Wags, yeah, you got it. And by the way, that's the chapter I have open on my customer rules book. It's wants and needs. Mm-hmm. And we have to let's finish this up, but you're right. And now I'm just going to jump right in. So here's two things that come out of this. So let me take a step back from what you just said, Bart, because I'm going to agree with the chiropractor. You can use the clown horn there. I'm going to agree with the chiropractor.
No, I'm going to make that a cut. I'm just going to use that on loop.
Yeah, right. I'm going to agree with the chiropractor here. Is that so? Once here's a huge differentiator in the customer experience, and this was a huge part about going out of network. So you want to ask me what I learned back to Cinema Air? One of the biggest things, it forced me to create our customer lifecycle and understand every touch point and identify the strengths and the weaknesses in every touch point. So I would call what you're talking about, Bart, I would call that in my clinic the plan of care discussion. And that's where where my PTs get the buy-in, right?
But you have that as a part of your training and as a part of your right. Clinical path, and it is a requirement of your therapist that they have what is known in your company as the plan of care discussion, right?
Correct.
It's just something you never learn in PT school.
No, and most of the people listening, or if it's not you guys listening because you're way cooler and way smarter than everyone else who's not listening, which by the way. Your task next week, listener, is to bring three people to listen to this podcast.
Hashtag DPT student.
There you go. Hashtag BizPT. Hashtag SolvePT. Hashtag mind if I don't. And you know, you don't learn this and you don't do it. Physical therapists generally do not think that they can actually diagnose and manage this patient especially the way they need to. Third knowledge bomb. Dirty little secret about pain, patients don't care about pain. They care about what pain doesn't allow them to do. So when you're talking about that emotion and when you're talking about getting that buy-in and tapping in, you don't really talk to the patient about, I'm going to make your pain less. You say, I'm going to allow you to play with your kids again, or we're going to put you on a path that's going to allow you to run, to play baseball, to sit all day at work without having pain, to sleep at night without having pain, whatever it is that they can't do.
And that goes back to, I tweeted this out before, that's the difference between telling a patient, I'm going to get you better versus I'm going to help you get better, right?
Hey, remember too, this ties into this article that's been floating around like it's the new Bible for medical, for healthcare. And it's kind of sad and kind of enlightening and kind of exciting all at the same time. That article floating around about that doctor who sees that patient who's not his. And what was the big take home? What was the one question he asked as everybody? What are your goals? What's important to you? So that has to come out in the evaluation. So during our evaluation, you have to get two goals. Back to what Bart was saying. Don't mind. I live very close. I live on the right side of the train tracks.
Are you a hobo?
I'm not on the wrong side. But you've got to find out what the customer goals are, and you've got to refer to them every single visit. If your goal is to run in the marathon in October, you have to tell everybody why that stupid exercise they're doing on the plinth, how it relates to running the marathon in October. That's how you show them you care. That's how you show them you listen to them. It was involved in your plan of care discussion, and it plays into everything we've been discussing here. It just, you know, being methodical about this. And if you don't want to be methodical about it, your business is not going to grow. You're not going to increase your NPS score. You're not going to get more people to love you. And so, you know, that's a big part of all this. It's got to be part of it.
And it's being detail oriented, right? And it's understanding your patient. And it's also, I think, understanding managing expectations and perceptions. So my question that I always ask to patients at the end of the subjective, before we get into all the objective stuff, is what goals do you have, or what brings you in, and how can I help you? What can I do for you, right? Because you need to know what the patient expects from you, why they're there. And sometimes it's managing those expectations, because they could be completely unrealistic. But if you never ask, you will never know. And that can also limit your outcome measures, because you won't be on the same wavelength. You won't be on the same page. And it's about their goals, not necessarily your goals. And if you, again...
Say that again, Gene, say that again, please.
Which part?
The last part you just said.
It's about, what's it about? Their goals, not your goals.
I think that's, God, even of the things I said, and you know, it's tough, but that's the most important thing said on this whole, on the whole podcast today. It's not about your goals. It's about their goals, regardless of what you think. And that's the whole clinical discussion I see all the time, you know, and not at, oh, your experience doesn't matter. The patient-driven outcomes versus outcomes. And it's like, you know what? I'll go to my grave losing out if it's not about the customer's outcomes, if it's about some goddamn data-driven outcomes measure. You know, I'm always going to go to the mat for customer-driven outcomes, because that's what really matters. And we're back to having what Joe said, having the customer engaged, finding out, did I get their buy-in, right? All this ties in together. It has to be about their goals, not yours.
And that pretty much summarizes it. So let's close out, Jerry. I want to ask you one more question from Cinema Air, and I think it's a good one to finish out with, is how has being out of network changed your life? Less stress, more bourbon?
The Giants win the World Series. Was that the question?
The question is how has being out of network changed your life? Less stress, more bourbon? ?
You know how it's changed my life?
How has it changed your life? Please tell us.
I've got a stack of books in the corner I probably never would have purchased if I wouldn't have gone out in network. So the beauty of understanding, by the way, I stole one of the baristas from Starbucks, and she came on and was an office coordinator for me. So
does she make you coffee?
You still friends with that manager after that?
Yeah, dude.
He never told them.
Yeah. So, you know what? It has made me go outside of my industry more. It has made me ask more questions. It has made me understand that healthcare is no different. Repeat after me, people. Healthcare is no different than any other industry on the face of the earth. We just have an issue with figuring out who our damn customer is. We think it's the insurance company. We think it's everybody else. As soon as we figure out the customer is the person standing in front of us, then I think we'll solve most of the issues. Because I love this discussion, because everything we discussed tonight was about the person who's in front of you, not the freaking third party payer. Blue Shield going to pay taxes in California. There you go. Mm-hmm. Only $4.5 billion in reserve, not for profit. So, you know, it was great to hear the talk about the true customer, who is the end user. The end user is always the most important person. So we got to get focused here.
Agreed. So I think that was a great podcast to clear up a lot of points on value, and still so much to say. And if you need more, and I think everyone does need more, Jerry's going to be in Chicago at Entropy Physical Therapy or entropyphysio.com. August 22nd, Chicago, one-day seminar. I mean, if there's anything you need to know about business and physical therapy, if you're not there, then don't even bother. So check out the website. It's on the website, the podcast website as well, therapyinsiders.com. So check that out. You can go. It'll link you right to the sign-up page. And I think we're getting – you must be filling up if you're not filled up yet.
I'm not filled up yet, but I'll tell you what, I'll throw it for the Therapy Insider Podcast or Die people. Do you like that new hashtag, man?
I do. Podcast I like or that. Die?
I'll tell you this. We're going to do a brunch, and I know I've shared this with some people. We're going to do a brunch Sunday morning, and I do not know what the limit is, but I'll tell you what, if you DM me, if you direct message me on Twitter and just type in the word brunch, I'll make sure you're included in the brunch when you sign up. So, which means you only got that information because you listened all the way to the bitter end of this wonderful educational podcast.
Or if Jerry's not following you, just email us at therapyinsiders@gmail.com. Yeah. And
just put brunch we'll pass in the subject line. That's all you got to do.
And by the way, I'll be there. I don't know if you guys are going, Joe and Bart, but I'm going. I'm there.
I'm there.
Done. Look at that. I'll bring my microphone.
Jerry should be sold out if you're going.
You know, I think he is. I think he's just being nice. So if you haven't gotten a seat yet, go ahead and sign up for the August 22nd seminar.
You know what I'm actually excited to tell you about the signups?
What's
there
that?
There are more current students signed up than PTs.
That's fantastic.
Than DPTs. Yeah.
That is incredibly...
I'm actually excited about that. And if it's a room full of engaged, want to learn, question asking, box breaking, status quo challenging DPT students, it will be a brutal success.
Yeah, that'll be a good seminar, and I'm even more excited to go. Yeah. So, all right, closing thoughts. Let's finish out. Bart, you've dropped three bombs already. You're going to finish out with a fourth.
Well, I don't know. I did get a triple salary tonight, right?
three hugs.
Three hugs. You know, I think where a lot of this started from was someone asking about how I think it was Corey from Utah. I don't remember his Twitter handle, but he was asking about, you know, how you can go to cash business and do you have to be a rock star? And there was this whole discussion over Twitter about whether you're a rock star and how you become a rock star in order to do this. And it really came to this delivering value. And ultimately, I want to tell everybody out there that what you need to do is believe in your services, believe in who you are, believe in what you're going to be able to provide for the person. And ultimately, you can do whatever you want for them. And that can be being a cash physical therapist, cash-based physical therapist. That can be being an out-of-network physical therapist. That could be being an in-network physical therapist. It doesn't really matter. But just be confident in who you are and what you're doing and know that you're going to do whatever you can to get that patient better. And you'll be well off and you'll be well on your way to being a rock star.
Ooh, rock star. I like that. Joe?
I'm going to take it back to the golden rule. Treat everybody like you would want to be treated. If you do that, your patients will be satisfied because you are putting them first at that point. That's how everybody wants to be treated. And for the love of God, smile, all right? Smile while you're doing it.
Seriously, when you first see a patient coming in, just smile and say hello. Just smile. Makes the world go around. Jerry?
Okay, I'm going to take this back to the cinema air question because really it does come down to one thing. The biggest thing I learned going out of network was the need to distinguish the difference between what people need and what people want. And that I would tie that back to how, because I can show you in the conversations I have today that convert the calls into paying customers, how the focus on listening for the wants are what drive those people to schedule. So I just want to throw this out. There's actually a chapter in this book. It's called The Customer Rules by Lee Cockerill. He was the executive vice president of operations at Walt Disney World. So needless to say, he had a pretty big role. And here's his definition or the difference between wants and needs. Products and services are needs. So that's us, physical therapy. Wants are about the experience of obtaining them. And I think if we all focus on that, when we have that customer on the phone and in front of us, that we can all be very successful. And like Bart said, then we can all be rock stars at what we do.
That's awesome. And so I want to finish out by saying that my head's been completely different in terms of business because of all the ARC stuff I've been doing, right? in physical therapy, I think we get lazy in assuming that patients know our value. And I think we were having this conversation on Twitter as well, that people, again, some PTs will assume that because we're PTs, people know kind of what we do and how we get better, and then how we get them better. And they don't. You can't assume that. So having to come up with a product from scratch and do all the manufacturing and building and really teaching and really showing somebody the value of a product from when there was no value at all because it didn't exist before has really taught me how to sell to a customer to show your value. And I to me, it comes down to four things. And this is, I think, transcendent, and you guys can agree or disagree if you want. But number one, I think you need to have a great product and or service. It all starts with that. Two, you need to know your audience. If you don't know your audience, you're just screaming into the wind. Three, you need to sell your audience properly. And you can't sell them based on what you know. You need to sell them based on how they understand and absorb information. And that comes down to empathy, that comes down to communication, that comes down to a lot of things that you need to know. And then four, and I'm sure Jerry will agree with this, you need to keep your audience happy. After they're sold, that's not enough. You need to keep them happy. And I think once you combine those four elements, I think that's when you have a successful business. And obviously those are topics that you can expand on, but I think those are the four pillars that you need to have a really successful business. So,
hold on real quick. I want to correct the record on Corey from Utah. It's Colby, and it's at Colby Jorgensen from Salt Lake City. My bad. You had some great questions and some great comments on Twitter. I just want to make sure you are properly referenced.
Shout out. All right. So I think that's a great three series of podcasts. If you haven't listened to the first two with Jerry Durham, definitely go back and check them out at therapyinsiders.com. They're still there. They're all free. Enjoy. I think it's a ton of valuable information. Check out Jerry August 22nd at entropy-physio.com. The link's on the website as well.
DM me brunch or email you the word brunch.
That's right. Email brunch to therapyinsiders at gmail.com.
Gets done.
And
at least I didn't say that freaking Cairo word. Jesus Christ, Bart said it.
Yeah, so much for our growing audience. But thank you everyone for listening. I didn't mention we just did hit a milestone. We just got 20,000 downloads of our podcast episodes, which is, I think, incredible. Joe and I started this show in February of 2013, just wanting to talk PT and just
our mothers listening.
Yeah, exactly. Get some information out there, and to see how it's grown, obviously through awesome guests and co-hosts that fill in like Bart and Urson that's joining in. So thank you to everyone for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more cool info and having Jerry back on if he wants to come back on.
Dude, I got your Skype. I got all your phone numbers. So now just Thursday, I dial in. You guys are either going to have to pick up or deal with me dialing in for an hour straight.
I like it. We'll just I'll just buzz you in for like mm-hmm. 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Whoever the guest is. But we do, speaking of guests, we have some awesome guests lined up, and we'll reveal those guests as the podcast gets closer the week of. I mean, it's been, again, an incredible amount of people contacting us and saying yes to these podcasts, and I'm really excited for some of the stuff that we have coming your way. So again, thank you for listening. Jerry, thanks for joining us these past 3 weeks, and August 22nd, we'll all be there. And if nothing else, I mean, even if it wasn't awesome information that Jerry's going to be sharing, I mean, it's going to be one hell of a brunch the next day. So we'll see you August 22nd in Chicago.
Woot!
Go O's.